Μένα μόλα, 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 τα ενταλάντα ζήσει αγίτη ασύνε. Ρουμίνια, 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 Φαργινίγου, βόλτα η άρθρο και κλείσα στην κυκέντα κρίγου. Τα μάμα λίγε λε, τα παστρώμα λε, τα καρνάτσα λε, την αγλέζα λε.
Hello, I'm your host Adrian Iosifescu, and this is the fourth episode of the History of the Romanian Jews podcast. Today we will get closer to modern times and discuss Jewish life in Romania in the 19th century. The beginning of the 19th century brings about political changes influencing Jewish settlements in the Romanian Principality, most of all in Moldova. The annexation of Bessarabia in 1812 by the Tsarist Russia and the strong Russian registration against Jews, the dissolution of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth in 1817 and the Treaty of Adrianople in 1829, leading to a strong Russian political influence over the Romanian principalities and resulting in the establishment of a series of written legislation dealing with regulations regarding foreigners and Jew settlers in the Romanian principalities. In Moldova, the Kalimaki Code of 1817 gave Jews the right to buy houses and shops inside the cities, however forbade the purchase of any property in the countryside. At this point, the Jewish population could have been divided into three categories. The native Jews, or in Romanian, pământeni, living in the territory before the 18th century, the Jews settled by royal charter, or Hrisov Domnesc, as we said before, and the foreign Jews, or Sudiții in Romanian, subject to foreign protection. Russian influence and tendencies of Jewish discrimination can be noticed in the organic regulation, regulamentele organice in Romanian, semi-constitutional code of law enforced in Wallachia in 1831 and in Moldova in 1832. It contained a series of restrictive and discriminatory dispositions against Jews, such as non-Christians could not benefit from civil and political rights, vagabond Jews were expelled, and the Haham Basha institution and the Jewish guild were abolished, moving the economic and political organization of the Jewish community directly under principality supervision. These changes catalyzed the apparition of multiple Jewish religious communities organized in each city, spiritually guided by the local rabbi. Despite restrictive measures taken against Jews, their number increased throughout the 19th century, especially after the Treaty of Adrianople, when Western capital would penetrate the Romanian principalities and Ottoman commerce monopoly would cease. Prince Mihail Sturza led the policy of attracting Jews from the neighboring states, thereby greatly expanding their number in Moldova. In 1803, at the time of the first census in Moldova, there were 12,000 Jews compared with 600,000 inhabitants. Due to emigration, the census of 1820 shows 19,000 Jews in Moldova, and in 27, 24,000 Jews, while in 1859, the census shows 130,000 Jews in Moldova. The number of Jews in Wallachia has always been smaller than in Moldova. In 1821, the census shows 3,300 Jews versus 1.5 million of inhabitants. The census of 1838 shows 6,000 Jews, And after the union of Moldova and Wallachia in 1862, more than 50,000 Jews emigrated from Moldova to Wallachia for economic opportunities. Jewish communities played an important role in the settlement of Moldavian cities and establishing Târguri and Târgușoare. These Târguri and Târgușoare were, in a sense, the equivalent of a shtetl. A great deal of settlements with Jews inhabitants display toponymic terms like Târg, Târgu Cucului, Târgu Neamț, Târgu Frumos. Some others use toponymic terms of pod, meaning bridge in English, such as Podul Iliuae, Podul Turcului. Since many Jewish settlements occupied areas in the vicinity of water streams crossing or road intersections. The capital of Moldova, Iasi, a city dating from the mid-14th century, displayed the biggest Jewish community throughout the Romanian principalities. The city's geographic position on the slope of seven hills influenced its entire urban structure. Being the permanent or temporary residence of Moldovan ruling princes, with its princely court, Curtea Domnească, the city of Iași went through a long urbanization process since the mid-14th century. In the 15th century, the city became a major artisanal, commercial, and economic center. Between the 16th and 17th centuries, once it became the Moldovan capital, Iași increased its urban territory and became the largest city in Moldova. Beginning with the 16th century, the Jewish community in Iași has already built a synagogue and a cemetery in the area known as Târgul Cucului. Different ethnic groups settled in Iași, defining their own neighborhoods, as in other medieval cities of Eastern and Southeastern Europe, with urban dimensions depending on the community's scale and wealth. Mahala or ulița were the Romanian terms used to designate such neighborhoods. Mahalaua Armenească, the Armenian quarter, Mahalaua Judovească, Jewish quarter, etc. Throughout the 19th century, with Iași's further urban development and population growth, Jewish urban presence becomes more diffuse and extends into the territory of the entire city by building synagogues, schools, and even a Jewish hospital in 1827. An interesting information about the city's Jewish customs is captured by two Scottish travelers in 1839. During their visit to Iași around the festivities of Yom Kippur, they learned that the city had around 200 synagogues contained in the Jewish neighborhood. Bucharest was the capital of the Principality of Wallachia. Up to 19th century, almost the entire Jewish population of Wallachia was concentrated in Bucharest. The history of the Jewish community in Bucharest is essentially the history of the Wallachian Jewry. The community, consisting of merchants and moneylenders from Turkey and the Balkan countries, is first mentioned in the middle of the 16th century in the responsa of several Balkan rabbis. Towards the middle of the 17th century, a new community, now predominantly Ashkenazi, was established. In the 18th century, the Jews were concentrated in the suburb of Mahalaua Popescului, or the neighborhood of Popescu. But as the community grew, a number began to move to other parts of the city where they even established synagogues. The populace, afraid of Jewish economic competition, was intensely hostile towards the Jews. The Bucharest community grew rapidly in the 19th century through immigration. From 127 families registered in Bucharest in 1820 to 594 people in 1831, the community grew to almost 6,000 people in 1860 and over 40,000 people in 1899, 15% of the total population of Bucharest. Continued quarrels within the Bucharest Jewish community and repeated complaints to authorities by each of the competing factors within the community brought about in 1862 the government's decision, which applied to the whole country, not to interfere anymore in the internal affairs of the Jewish communities and to withdraw from them their official status. The decision, reiterated in 1866, led to the gradual disorganization and dissolution of the Ashkenazi community in Bucharest, which in 1874 has ceased to exist as an organized entity. Several attempts were later made to reconstitute the community, the most serious in 1908. However, it was only in 1919 that an organized Jewish community was again established in Bucharest. Until 1919, various benevolent societies and organizations undertook education and social welfare activities within the Jewish community. Chief among them were the Choir Temple Congregation, formerly established in 1876 as a separate and independent organization, levying its own tax on kosher meat, and the Brotherhood Zion of the Bnei Brit, founded in Bucharest in 1872 by the American consul B.F. Pixotto. This succeeded in setting up and maintaining a network of educational and charitable institutions, including 15 schools, filling the void created by the lack of an organized community. Cultural bodies were also established, and a number of Jewish journals and other publications made their appearance. Bucharest also became the center of Romanian Jewry political activity and the struggle for emancipation. National Jewish bodies, among them the Union of Native Jews, established their headquarters there. Among the most prominent spiritual and religious leaders of the community before the World War I were Antoine Levy and Moritz Beck, rabbis of the Choir Temple Congregation from 1867 to 1869 and 1873 to 1923, respectively, and Isaac Elzer Taubes, rabbi of the Orthodox Congregation from 1894 to 1921. The most prominent lay leader was Adolf Stern. In the 19th century, a high proportion of the Jews in Bucharest were occupied in crafts. There were 2,712 Jewish artisans in the city in 1899. Others engaged in commerce, and several, especially Sephardic Jews, were prominent in banking. The National Revolution of 1848 brought new hopes of integration for the Jews in Europe. Romanian revolutionaries had mixed feelings about the Jews, ranging from pity to disgust, yet it was admitted that these wandering foreigners were necessary to society in the role of victims of the people's intolerance and prejudices. The revolutionary proclamation in Moldova promised civil rights to all, irrespective of religion. The one in Valachia, dated from November 1848, in Article 21, decreed the emancipation of the Jews and political rights for all compatriots of other religion. This article began to take effect immediately when a Jewish banker, Hillel Manoach, was appointed member of the Bucharest City Council. How did the Jews react to these events? The Jews only took part in the revolution of 1848 on an individual basis, which was perhaps due to the fact that there was no forum in the principalities which represented all of the Jewish population. Many Jews participated in the revolutionary events, like Lazarika Zarafu, Daniel Rosenthal, a painter whose attachment to the revolution later cost him his life, Barbu Iscovescu, another painter, and most important, Davision Bali, the Sephardic banker who financed the revolution in Valachia. Davision Bali was the maternal great-grandfather of the writer Mihail Sebastian, Joseph Hector, who we'll be talking later on about. The Jews contributed to the cause in different ways, some giving up their fortunes to help the proscribed revolutionaries. C.A. Rossetti, as Minister of the Interior, spoke those of the part played by the Jews. As far as payment is concerned, the Jews have paid me by taking my hand in a brotherly way when I was in exile on foreign soil. They even paid me with their blood, for 6 years ago, one of them gave his life for my country, David Rosenthal. Antisemitism in Romania in the second half of the 19th century can only be considered in close relationship with similar performances in other countries. But there is an important difference between the manifestations of this phenomenon in the second part of the 19th century in the countries where Jews were living legally, Central and Western Europe, and those where they have not yet been emancipated, Eastern Europe. Even in the former, political equality of the Jews did not take place simultaneously, and it met with strong resistance. In fact, although the Constituent Assembly in France proclaimed the emancipation of the Jews in September 1701, it is not finally accepted in England until 1860, in Germany until 1864, in Italy until 1866, and in Austro-Hungary until 1867. In Western Europe, antisemitism was more political than economic, while the context in which it developed in Romania and Russia, including Poland, was different. In those countries, antisemitism was openly practiced by the governments and unleashed expressions of extreme violence. Russian antisemitism began with the introduction of the system of pogroms. Freedom did not exist in Russia, while in Romania it was proclaimed by the constitution. It was, though, a trick, as we shall see, that in reality the Jews were excluded from enjoying civil and political rights. It was economic, social, and demographic factors which characterized and shaped the explosions of hatred against the Jews. While the anti-Semitic phenomenon in Russia may be explained by the specific conditions of that country, in Romania, the fact of what became the real Jewish problem in the second part of the 19th century are different. The Congress of Paris in 1856 initiated a long series of political pressures by the foreign powers on the Romanians to extend equal rights also to the Jews, but to no avail. Instead, there were attempts by the Ministry of Interior to expel the Jews from villages. The union of the Moldova and Wallachia principalities happened in 1862 under the Prince Alexandru Ioan Cuza. So from now on, we'll be talking about the Romanian kingdom instead of the two principalities. In the struggle for the union, which agitated the country after the Crimean War, many Jews of Wallachia and Moldova ranged themselves on the side of the union. After the 1864 union, Prince Alexandru Ioan Cuza succeeded in his new civil code in granting Jews the right to vote in local elections. But this did not solve political rights. It is an open question whether the reign of Alexandru Ioan Cuza was as favorable to the Jews as has been pretended. The history of the time has not yet been written, and the documents are for the most part unknown. Both anti-Jewish excesses and accusations of ritual murder took place under Cuza as well as before, and decrees and circulars bearing the earth mark of persecution were drawn up in his reign. Later, this served as models for the governments of Prince and then King Charles, and certain laws made by Cuza contain the germs of future restrictions. The fundamental event that marked the difference between the Jews in Romania and the Jews of Central and Western Europe was the adoption of the 1866 Romanian Constitution, specifically the Article 7 of the Basic Law, which made Romanian citizenship conditional on membership of the Christian religion. Only foreigners of Christian right may acquire the status of Romanian. It was a political decision with economic roots. In order to pressure the Constituent Assembly, the city dwellers attacked and partially destroyed the Bucharest Choral Temple, then under construction. A new set of persecutions started. repeated expulsions of Jews from villages as vagrants in 68, 72, and limitation of liquor selling permits in 1873. The booming Romanian bourgeoisie wanted to have an advantage in the competition with the Jewish bourgeoisie. In spite of their isolation, the Jews showed their attachment to Romania during the war for independence from Turkish suzerainty. During the war of 1877-1878, there were 883 Jewish soldiers out of a total of 35,000 in the Romanian army. The Jews fought brilliantly, and many Jewish soldiers were decorated and their names appeared after the war in the list published officially. The contribution of the Jews to the war for independence was not limited to the battlefield. Across the country, a series of committees were formed to collect gifts of money and in-kind clothing, horses, cattle. The organization called to the Jewish women in Bucharest asked the women to give the maximum to help the soldiers who have been wounded in this great battle for the future of our country. There was no delay in answering these appeals, and Romanian newspapers were quickly filled with lists of subscriptions by Jews from all parts of the country. The Zion Fraternity contributed 4 ambulances and placed them under the patronage of the reigning princes. The Jewish community of Iasi opened 2 hospitals, one in Bucharest and the other one near the field of battle at Turnu Măgurele. Many welfare associations within the Jewish communities contributed a great deal to the war effort. The heads of the Jewish banks of Daniel and Fields in Iasi and Hillel Manoach of Bucharest were decorated with the Star of Romania for their exceptional work for the Romanian war effort. When the war was over, the Romanian Jews rightfully hoped for a change in their situation, a cessation in persecutions, and the granting of political rights. Such a change would be announced at the Congress of Berlin, where it was proposed by the French delegates. The Russia-Turkish War of 1877 was a sequel to the failure of the Conference of Constantinople in 1876 to regulate the situation in the Balkans. That war, declared by Russia in April 1877, stated as its aim the emancipation of Christians in the Ottoman Empire. Romania, still a vassal state to the Ottoman Empire, seized the opportunity to attain its independence. On April 1877, Mihail Kogelnicianu, Minister of Foreign Affairs, signed with Baron Dmitry Stuart, Russian counselor and General Consul at Bucharest, an agreement which allowed the Russian army to cross Romanian territory. The independence of the country was proclaimed on May 10, 1877, the anniversary of the accession of Prince Charles. He took command of the army himself and crossed the Danube to help the Russian army, which suffered many defeats after a few victories. One by one, the Turkish fort fell before the victorious advance of the Romanian army. In November, Osman Pasha turned the city of Plevna over to Prince Charles, and on February 12, 1878, the Romanian army entered Vidin in northern Bulgaria on the Romanian frontier. But Romania was not invited to attend the peace talks at her reward. The Romanian government learned of the peace treaty of San Stefano on March 1878 from the newspapers of Moscow. Article 5 and 19 of that treaty related to Romania. In the first, Turkey recognized Romanian independence. In the second, though, Romania was to cede southern part of Bessarabia to Russia and receive in exchange a part of Dobrogea. Discontent over this arose at once in Romania. Nor were the great powers satisfied with this arrangement, which was taken without their consultation. The idea of European Congress to create the basis for a durable peace in the Balkans quickly arose. That was the Berlin Congress, which began in June 1878 with the participation of Germany, Austro-Hungary, England, France, Italy, Russia, and Turkey. Romania expected two things from the Congress: recognition of its independence by the great powers and prevention of the seizure of the southern part of Bessarabia. The Jewish question was raised, and the Prime Minister Brătianu replied that he was preparing a draft law aiming at the emancipation of native Jews and that foreign Jews might obtain naturalization on an individual basis. But this was only a way to avoid the problem. In July 1877, the Foreign Affairs Minister Cogălnicianu has promised emancipation of the Jews to the representatives of the Jewish Alliance of Vienna. From February 1878 to the end of Turkish War and up to the beginning of the Congress in June, the Romanian government did nothing in that direction. The 1879 revision of the Romanian Constitution did not solve the problem of a Jewish emancipation despite pressures from the great powers. At the Congress of Berlin, Bismarck, Disraeli, and other parties put it very clearly. The recognition of the independence of Romania from the Ottoman Empire after the War of 77-78 will be given in exchange for political emancipation of the Jews in the Romanian space. Eventually, in October 1879, the Romanian Parliament approved a formal amendment of the famous Article 7, where Jews will be able to obtain naturalization, however not automatically, but rather under certain conditions. Not immediately, but after a period of at least 10 years, and not in block or by categories, but on an individual basis, which each case being voted in both houses and then approved by the parliament through a special law. Applicants had to submit a file with all documents, which some of them did not have anymore, along with an application for naturalization to the parliament. Under the circumstances, the new constitution provision of the political emancipation of the Romanian Jews proved to be a dead letter. From 1879 until 1900, only 85 persons were naturalized, 27 of whom died during the same period. In 1913, besides the veterans of 1877, the total number of naturalizations after the Berlin Congress was only 529. And this increase was due mostly to the Jews of Dobroja, because the government decided in 1909 to grant political rights to the residents of that area who had formerly been Turkish subjects. The naturalization applications always caused passionate debates in the parliament on the Jewish question. One of the first and most famous occurred in 1880 concerning Daniel, a native Jew who founded the oldest bank in Moldova and, as you may recall, was decorated for his support of the independence war effort. The naturalization of Adolf Stern, one of the leaders of the Romanian Jews, also met with strong opposition in parliament and was only through his literary works that he was just able to obtain the necessary majority in the Chamber of Deputies. Among those who were naturalized, some had to pay large sum of money to the senators and deputies in order to enter the Romanian nation. The system of individual naturalization, which gave the members of parliament absolute power, encouraged corruption. In early 1911, a group of 12 deputies was created which proposed naturalizing 3,000 Jews in exchange for a large sum of money. Their agents went through the Jewish communities to register applications and, of course, to extort money. The case of Professor Lazar Șoineanu, originally Shane, who revolutionized Romanian philology through his widely recognized studies and who was refused naturalization after 12 years of struggle and hope, is typical of the way in which the government envisaged solving emancipation. Eventually, disgusted and humiliated, in 1901, Șoineanu exiled himself to Paris. My maternal grandfather, born in Romania in 1894, At least three generations of Jews in Moldova got his citizenship only in 1938, and only because he fought in the Romanian army in the First World War. The brother of my paternal grandmother, born in Romania in 1875, at least two generations of Jews in Bucharest, got his citizenship in 1906 when his individual petition to the Romanian parliament was approved. The episode notes reflect documents related to my family's struggle to obtain Romanian citizenship, although they live for generations in the country. A painting by the famous Romanian artist Nicolae Grigorescu is enlightening. In 1880, the artist exhibited at the official Paris exhibition a painting known as The Jew with a Goose. The fresh breath of the work and its crude realism impressed the art critics of the time. The work was noticed and enjoyed tremendous success. This was not the first work by the painter with a Jewish subject. Grigorescu made several paintings and drawings of Moldavian or Galician Jews. The Jew with a Goose represents a typical Eastern European Jew. He wears a traditional black kaftan and hat with fur, shtremel, had a beard and ritual sideburns. He is a poor Jew from a shtetl in Moldova. In his left hand, he holds a piece of paper, and in his right hand, he carries a live goose. Jews in Moldova were big geese breeders. Goose meat and fat were part of the local traditional diet. The image of a poor Jew holding a live goose wasn't anything unusual. The strange element of the painting is the piece of paper which the character holds in his left hand. It carries a judicial stamp and appears to be an official document. One can decipher to whom the petition is addressed. Mr. President and gentlemen members. Coming from a shtetl in Moldova, the Jew in Grigorescu's painting is going to Bucharest to submit to the parliament a naturalization application, bring with him, as a bribe, a goose. The huge amusement of the situation represented in the painting is that the poor Jew imagined that such a minor bribe, a live goose, could be handed to the parliament to solve such an important issue. Grigorescu's painting should be understood as the irony of a simple man trying to survive in a corrupt society. The result? The Jews of Romania were the last in Europe to receive citizenship between 1919 and 1923. This produced a huge disappointment among Romanian Jews and the change of strategy. Instead of a rapid process of integration of Jews into the Romanian society, there was a process of relative isolation. We witness, despite a Central European zeitgeist, an increase in the degree of establishing Jewish institutions, including cultural ones. The founding in 1876 of the first Yiddish theater in the world at Yassi is a symptom of this phenomenon. At the time, the life of the Jewish community in Romania was substantially different from both Jewish life in West as well in the East of Europe. In 1866, Romania missed a crucial moment to synchronize with Central Europe. In 1867, the Jews of Austria-Hungary became politically emancipated after all simultaneously with those in France, Netherlands, Belgium, Germany, Italy, etc. The residents of Hungary became citizens of the Hungarian nation, a political and civic rather than ethnic nation. They became all Hungarians of Catholic, Protestant, or Mosaic confession. Jews speak the Hungarian language and they integrate or even assimilate in the host society. To this day, the census of Romania yields more Mosaic than Jewish citizens because the Jews of Transylvania register as ethnic Hungarians of Mosaic religion. Obviously, however, antisemitism in Austria-Hungary persisted. the emergence in the late 19th century of Karl Luger as the anti-Semitic mayor of Vienna, and in response of the Zionist Theodor Herzl are quite telling. It is in this part of the continent, in Central Europe, and namely in this era, that the term anti-Semitism is forged for the first time by the German publicist William Marr in 1881. However, given all this anti-Semitism going on, the Central European Jewish intellectuals do not isolate themselves by establishing institutions which preserve a cultural identity. Just the opposite, according to the principles of the Enlightenment, they integrate in the dominant culture. In the Romanian space, the attempt of Jewish emancipation fails with the approval of the 1866 Constitution, which allows Romanian citizenship to Christians only and is not resolved by its later amending. Deeply disappointed, the Jews have every reason to strengthen their community and cultural institutions and to preserve their cultural and linguistic identity. Unlike the Jews of Russia, the Romanian Jews have not only the motivation, but also the opportunity to do so. Social and religious tolerance allows Jews in the Romanian space to establish Yiddish language, newspapers, schools, and theater. In a nutshell, the Jews of Central Europe can, but they will not. Those in Russia will, but cannot. And those in Romania will and can establish a Yiddish theater and other community cultural institutions. The upsurge of anti-Semitism in Romania in the last third of the 19th century has been explained in socio-economic terms. Although politically independent, Romania was characterized by a semi-feudal condition and a grave agrarian problem. Instead of striving for modernity together with the Jewish urban strata, the emerging Romanian bourgeoisie, once in power, preferred to achieve social status by acquiring vineyards and farmland. This resulted in creating a new agrarian class that replaced the decadent boyars, but they have no incentive to develop the industrial sector that would deprive them of cheap labor force. This bind the peasants to the farmland, and the economic crisis caused by drought in Romania in 1900 generated the peasants' revolt of 1907, in which many Jews were killed. All evils in Romania were the fault of the Jewish invasion and the Jewish proliferation. The most immediate reaction of the Jewish population to the situation was massive Jewish emigration. We'll discuss this in a separate episode. Next week, we'll review Jewish life in the 20th century Romania. Until then, be well.